Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. As always, I'm your host, Paul Booth. Today I'm joined by one of my favorite guests. She does reporting for us. She came on last year, has an idea of we would talk movies over Facebook, and then I just was thinking, you know what, why don't we just do it on the air? And it's gotten good numbers. Her son has been on the show. With that, to you new audience listeners, I'd like to welcome Erin Murphy.
Hello.
And Erin, so you know, is a big component of this show is not just that it's people in the film business. We wanted movie lovers, film buffs. We've had on film historians. So you don't have to have won a festival or crewed a show or any of that. So today we're going to talk about it's awards season. And to us, you know, the show is not about awards, but these are the films that are out there right now that everybody goes and sees. Erin, how would you best describe this time, given that your son's livelihood is the rest of the year of making movies that keep us from these great films? So him and I are always joking how I'm like, what you work on is why we don't get good films till November.
That's right. Well, the thing is, too, is that, you know, I was just saying to my friend, my Cineplex by my house is playing Star Wars in like six theaters.
Right.
So I have to drive 35 minutes just to go see something that they consider artsy. It's like, really? So, you know, like I can't even see, I have to drive a half hour just to go see Jackie. Or, you know, so all these movies that are good quality, they're all being overshadowed by, you know, these big blockbusters. But that's what brings in the money.
Right. And,
I guess,
you know,
yeah.
It's funny that, what is it? I mean, gosh, there was a time where it was like Truffaut was considered artsy. Then it was like anything Ang Lee did until Life of Pi was artsy. And then it just seems like
right.
Anytime there's a point or a life lesson.
Right, right.
It's considered
anytime
artsy
it's good
now.
Quality writing, character driven, all of a sudden it's a movie.
Yeah. It's,
like I'm going to see 20th Century Women on Wednesday. And I know that it probably won't even come to my theater by here. So I have to go down to the Grand Theater, to the our art house just to see that.
I want
to
see that so bad. There's, well, you know me, what don't you and I want to see, but
that's true.
There's a what do you call it? I get the way you're talking about driving, but as you know, for me, a 30-minute drive is 2 hours. I get all these movies open
true.
LA at Christmas, and they don't come here till like January 15th.
Yeah,
so,
oh, dear.
So you know how with the way everything moves, it's like I'm so behind because I just saw Ben Affleck's Live by Night, and I wanted to talk with him. Yeah, you should check it out. I think you'd dig it. It's a great great spin on the gangster pick.
Yeah.
I figured it wouldn't get any Golden Globes or be up for any Oscars. It's a little too you have to appreciate the gangster genre and but Ben Affleck does
a great
job.
And that's a tough genre to be in. That's a tough genre to compete against because, you know, Scorsese kind of is the grand poobah of that genre.
Oh,
that's,
right,
that's a tough
exactly.
Thing.
And
that's a tough, you know, thing to get into.
Right, yeah. It's great. Yeah, it is. It's funny that you say that because I told someone I saw it. They really liked it. And I said, you know, it was people probably thought Scorsese was nuts when he was trying to redo Jimmy Cagney gangster movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's like people are thinking Ben Affleck's nuts. So I was thinking, like, you know, maybe there's something there. Who knows? Like, Ben Affleck's
maybe the baton needs to be passed to the next generation. Or even just a different, like, what was somebody? Oh, somebody was watching. Somebody had commented the other day. And go, oh, The Departed. So many F-words. It's like, have you ever seen a Scorsese movie? Have you ever seen? And the movie's about blue collar in Boston, of course, it's going to be a lot of F-bombs. Really? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Or like watching The Town. You know, it's like, come on, these are blue-collar bank robbers out of Boston. There's going to be a lot of F-bombs
town.
In this movie.
Yeah, The Town. Another Ben Affleck, just brilliantly directed movie. He's so amazing. And all four of his movies have been different. Yeah, he's. I mean, I tell people not to watch Gone Baby Gone because the subject matter gets to people, but it was still a good movie. It served its purpose. It was a great debut. I guess since we're talking Affleck here, you saw Manchester by the Sea, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, and this will jump to Casey.
That was the first love.
So, Yeah, so all you people know that I know the difference between Casey and Ben. I wouldn't be allowed to host this show if I didn't. So Manchester by the Sea, of course, Casey Affleck got the Golden Globe for it. He's one of the front runners for the Oscar. I am not going to discuss the personal business that's going around the media about him right now. This show is here to talk about movies.
Oh, really? I didn't realize there wasn't anything.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff. Just Google it.
Okay.
So with that, we're going to stick with the movies.
He seems very anti-Hollywood. You know, he doesn't seem like a big red carpet guy. And you know, he went to the Golden Globes looking a little, you know, he looked disheveled. He just kind of looked like, yeah, you know, I put out a good movie and I win. Yeah, I don't see him like really marketing himself.
Right.
He seems very laid back.
There is that. I mean, it's funny, you know, if you have a brother who, you know,
right,
has won a Best Picture Oscar, and he was held in Ben. I feel like he was held in Ben's shadow for so long, and he's actually a really talented guy himself. So it's not like he needed Ben to.
Absolutely. Right. You're right. He didn't need Ben. Yeah. He didn't need to be in the back. He started out in the back scene of Good Will Hunting, and now he's on his own. He's driving that car himself now.
Right. But when you Google what's going on about him, I made a rule that I would refuse to be a media outlet that mentioned it. You'll know exactly why he looked the way he did. And like, I was looking at him. I was surprised he even showed up, because if I was in his position with what's being said, I'd be like, I'm going to watch the show with my parents or something. I'll send Matt to go get my Golden Globe. So with the movie, what'd you think?
It was incredibly powerful. My sister said to me, oh, bring tissues. It was amazing. I thought that he was the sadness and the pain that poor man was feeling. And when my sister said bring tissues, I thought I was going to be crying for the nephew's story, losing his father, having to move in with his uncle. I thought that's where the tearjerker was. I never realized that what was going to make me sad was Casey Affleck's story. And he and Michelle Williams, that one scene by the bridge where he's like, I'm sorry. She said, I'm sorry. The pain that they felt as a couple was just heartbreaking. And my heart just ached for this guy. I mean, the guilt that he must have felt. And then, of course, he loses, you know, his family. And then he loses his wife. I mean, no wonder he's just kind of downtrodden. But I thought he was really good. I mean, some people might have thought he was a little one note, that he was depressed and down the entire time. But, hey, I would have been too if that was my family. Yeah. There would have been one note with me too. Depression, depression, and more depression. Or maybe depressed and drunk. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's for me, what made it really odd was when you're talking about the tough situation with the nephew. And again, these aren't spoilers because it says it in the synopsis online
or the trailer
alludes to it. But, you know, over Christmas, we had a family situation that was kind of, my niece was in a tough situation where she, you know, let's just say should be, you know, living with me if I had the money or whatever.
Right.
And so to see that, I think, you know, this has only happened with me with one movie. And I had a lot of conversations with Josh about this. Was for like 2 years, I didn't know how Life of Pi ended. Cause when I saw it and the tiger, you know, helps keep him alive leaves.
Right.
I had blacked out because I remember I just started crying and I literally blacked out. I was still awake, but I was like, because my dog got sick one day at like 2 and died like 4 hours later.
Oh,
dear. And so it was just like exactly like that part. So I think with Manchester by the Sea, there were certain parts where it was kind of like, you know, this was a week ago, you know, this was.
Yeah, hitting.
You know, like, I haven't gotten past this. Am I being fair to the movie? I mean,
right.
You know, I think it's not my quote, but it's, you know, Steven Tyler has that great quote of there's tons of beauty in the ugliness of art. And so that's what Manchester by the Sea felt like to me. I felt like it did its job because I left sad.
Right. And you left thinking not everything needs to be a musical. Not everything needs to be sunshine and rainbows and unicorns. I mean, you left talking about it. You left, you know, examining your own life, being grateful for your own life And so anything that's thought provoking, that's okay in my book.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, to me, I lean towards that. You know, it's obvious not every movie can be that, but that's what I kind of am out there for. And this week, the way I had went to the movies 4 days, or last week I went to the movies 4 days in a row, and I almost went the fifth day to see The Founder with Michael Keaton. But so yeah, it was kind of a Manchester by the Sea was the second one, which I was going to mention Hidden Figures, but if I remember correctly, you saw Fences, correctly? Or
saw Fences, yes. Saw Hidden Figures.
Okay, so Fences, since we're sticking with the depressed things, just, you know, not that this is a depressing show, please don't turn it off now. We're just discussing it. But Fences, I thought, for me, you know, again, personal to everybody, I don't think any film, you know, you can walk out and say, oh my gosh, that only happened. But what was very, very odd was that movie, like to a T, was how my grandfather acted with my father. And
oh, got it.
So every story I heard, it was like, you know, you make up in your head how your grandparent acted, or you visualize what kind of story your father's told you, and now you're seeing it, and then this is a spoiler, so I can tell it to you in code. Then what the young boy becomes, that is what
right.
my father became when he left home.
Right.
So then
right.
it was like, you know, really, are they going with like the icing on the cake? It can't just be the cake. And
right.
it was really, for me, it was weird because I spoke with my father after. He really wasn't that upset because he's went through his own process and accepted it because he's in his late 60s. So he's just like, you know, I can't harp on how it was when I was a kid. But for me, it was this cathartic moment of like understanding my father more and also understanding my grandfather more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And not letting education be an excuse, but that's really what I felt. I mean, what did you think?
I agree. And I thought that it was interesting because everybody was like, Denzel, Denzel, Denzel. I'm like, you know what? I couldn't keep my eyes off of oh my God, I'm totally blanking on her name.
Viola Davis. Oh,
Viola
she's got
Davis.
The Oscar.
She's the one who I couldn't take. I was like, holy cow, she was powerful. And the thing is, when they did this on Broadway, so they had a rhythm. Those guys had a rhythm down. So probably taking it to film. Because, you know, I can imagine how it's probably so difficult to be a director directing yourself as an actor. But I think if you've done it that much time on stage, you've got the acting part down. And I think that probably was an easier transition for him because he had kind of already owned this actor doing him on stage, owned this character doing him on stage for all that time. But for me, I thought Viola Davis was the thing that kept me engaged because she was amazing.
Yeah. I think she's got the Oscar, and, you know, that was another thing that was very strong for my mother was that she was watching the way, because of the same generation, she was watching the way men would act towards her mother. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I walked out with, you know, my mom in a really bad mood, my dad just kind of quiet, and then I was just thinking like, wow, now I like really understand where I come from and why, you know, this gets said and that gets ignored. And so for me, it was like beyond great. And it was funny because I remember my mom just looked at me and she was just like, yeah, it's great that you understand your grandparents, but, you know, you didn't live the way Denzel acted to your mother. So like,
yeah,
the movie didn't,
yeah.
She's like, don't get me wrong. She's like, the acting was great. And I appreciate
but
all
it
art.
Probably brought up, yeah.
Yeah, she's like,
brought
but
up a
said,
lot of pain.
Yeah, she appreciated that. She said, "Don't get me wrong. It did its job. If it's put me in this bad of a mood, and it was authentic, it's more authentic than I even want to talk about." But what I was really interested in, and this is a main reason why I want people to see it, is because, like you were saying, it being a play, and then with the way Viola Davis mentioned in her Golden Globe speech, it came off to me like the movie was about her dad.
Yeah,
it
sounded like that she was relating to.
Yeah.
Or she said her dad couldn't even read. Yeah, her dad can't even read.
Yeah, so I thought
So
I thought that must have been heavy duty. I mean, I guess you have to be, like you're saying, the actors as well crafted to them. I mean, if someone asked you to play your mom or your sister or asked me to play my father when he was young, it's like I think I could get to the moon easier. So I just really want people to see it because, especially since it was a play, like you said, they had it down, the staging, the blocking. But with so much of the movie taking place in one place, I think that is so hard to do. There's only like 12 Angry Men does it right. The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even think of 10 movies. Go ahead,
I think that's the whole concept behind The Fences, was that Fences was the thing he was building was also his life. It was very fenced in his life. Like the camera could have followed him on his garbage man route through Pittsburgh, but it didn't. It focused on that very small microcosm of his life, which is why he felt he was suffering, being smothered. Because he's just like, this is my whole life is this, you know, I go to this job, I come home. But you know what? That's everybody's life then and now. You know, it's like pretty much you work and you come home and you take care of your family. That's not a new concept to anybody. But the whole, the building the fence, you know, him taking out his frustrations and putting up the fence just fenced his life in even more.
There's so many great metaphors. I want to go back and watch it. I know no one will go with me, so I'll have to wait till there's a time until I've seen everything else. But I highly recommend it. Again, we've started this out by talking about two movies that are going to maybe dislike your grandparent or get mad at your sibling, but this is important stuff. We need to continue to evaluate. I would like to jump into, if you saw it, Hidden Figures.
Yes. I remember leaving there thinking to myself, I am embarrassed, ashamed, that I am a 60-year-old woman and I had never heard of this story. You know, that's terrible. Why was this not more of a relevant part of American history? Why weren't these women, you know, the focus of Black History Month whenever that started becoming something that they were doing in schools? It wasn't part of my generation. But you know, it was like, really? These women were instrumental. And it resonated two reasons. They were women and they were Black. I mean, that was crazy. I mean, what they were doing was unheard of. And what I liked about them is they weren't militant. They weren't angry. They just, what do I need to do? Okay, I'm going to do it. Like the one went back to school, found out she needed to go to school at a segregated high school, went to the judge, got a court order, boom, she could go. I mean, so they didn't sit back and they weren't pissed off. They said, okay, if I got to take X, Y, and Z steps to do this, then I'm going to take X, Y, and Z steps to do this. Yeah, really, really good. And I always love at the end of a movie when it's about real people that they show who they are. I just, for some reason, that resonates with me to see the real picture of what they did after that snippet of that movie. What was the rest of their life like? I mean, you know, I'm looking at some of those husbands going, some of those men could have been, you know, really intimidated by these powerful women.
Oh,
and they didn't. Yeah. The guys were supportive and they stuck around. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, you know, and this is one film where I don't want to, you know, I don't think it's like spoiling some of it hurts. I mean, people, this is like one you can't skip to where you have to like at least let the tail of the cat out of the bag, because if you just watch the trailer, it's meant to not let you know what it's about. But it's just such a key point of American history.
Yeah.
On, like you were saying, both sides, like the being ashamed. I was, you know, I'm still like just young enough to where my dad's like, you weren't even there. Stop getting so mad about that. You know, like,
but that's like saying that we can't get worked up about the Holocaust. It's like, as a human being walking this planet and sharing this space with other people, you need to be, I mean, I'm not a Black person. It doesn't mean I'm not going to get upset about the way African-Americans are treated. I just think as a humanitarian, that's going to. Yeah. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. We certainly can hope it doesn't repeat itself. You know, that way.
No, for sure.
Make sure it doesn't repeat itself.
Well, mainly it's just that I sometimes go on tangents about Johnson and Nixon. And and I think it's just that my dad's sick of hearing me, because I know he was thrown in jungles while those guys were doing their things. And we won't get into that. So But Hidden Figures, you guys have to see this not only as a part of American history, but just a part of human history. Like Aaron said, I mean, I like that you brought that up, because especially now with all these, they're meant as human marches, but they're titled and called women's marches. That this movie came out at the perfect time. This movie for me really kind of explained to me why there is women that are so militant. I mean, I love Huey P. Newton. I don't think you have to have a machine gun to make your point. But I mixed with that Any Means Necessary of Malcolm X. I think it's like, you can think like Malcolm X, but you should act like Dr. King.
There you go.
And that's what I felt like, you know, you don't have to dislike every person who doesn't know the story. Give people a chance to hear the story. And
that was another thing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to do a quick plug. Our last guest, well, two guests ago, you guys, please go in the archives. It was a guy named Wynn Thomas. He was the production designer for Hidden Figures. So he's actually the first collaborator with the director, and he's in charge of the set building, the design of NASA, the set decoration, the costumes, all the art departments work under him. He's even on the movie before the cinematographer. And
interesting.
We had a great episode, but we both, like any film junkie, got a little bit off topic talking about some movies. And then I hung up and thought, wait a minute, this guy just did Hidden Figures and it's in theaters. Why was I not like, but that's the fun of it, right? I mean, it was like he's done Do the Right Thing and Malcolm X, and he did Ron Howard's A Beautiful Mind. So it was, I didn't want to just make it about who he knows. So, but go ahead, Aaron, you were going to say something. I just wanted to let people know that we had that in the archives. Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead. You were saying something about Hidden Figures.
I had an Amber Alert just kind of buzzed through my phone. The thing that I found interesting was the things that the white people weren't even aware of. She goes, where's the restroom? She goes, I don't know where your restroom is. Or the fact that Kevin Costner was so clueless that this woman had to walk a half mile just to go to the bathroom because it didn't affect his world. And because he kept thinking, why is she constantly leaving here? And I loved her scene. That's the most angry that any of those women got. But she's just, you know, but her whole thing was like, I got to walk just to go to the bathroom, and I'm sitting here and no one's willing to share their coffee pot with me. And the minute he found that out, he rectified it. I don't know if his character was true or not. You know, I don't know, you know, everybody in that movie except for the women were really who they were. Kevin Costner's character could have been added, you know, just as a catalyst. I don't know. But I just loved his reaction. Like, well, let's take care of that. You're going to the bathroom. There shouldn't be a reason why you have to go, you know, go outside. And, of course, they made such a big deal of just watching her. Like, just, I mean, how many times, if you think about how many times a day you go to the bathroom, in an 8-hour workday, maybe 4 times. That's a lot of time to give you away from your work if you're walking, you know, a half mile and then a half mile back. Yeah. That takes up some time.
That was such a great point. Now you mentioned that you saw Jackie. I didn't get to see that.
No, I have not seen Jackie. Not even to Netflix that it was so bad.
You're told
someone
that
said,
it was
don't
that
see
bad.
It on the big screen. Yeah, someone said don't see it on the big screen or the little screen. I was like, oh dear, okay then.
Wow.
Yeah. Someone said it wasn't worth even Netflixing. I'm like, okay. And I
that
can't remember
be, that's
why,
interesting.
Because you know a lot of times that might be a Netflix thing for me. But here's the thing, if I find out, you know, in a couple of weeks that she's getting an Academy Award nomination, I'll go see it. If she's up for Best Actress, I'll go see it. Yeah.
Well, you know,
I will go see that.
She's so great anyways, and she has such a it's got to be interesting to be from Israel. That alone speaks enough volumes. But I think she's just such a great actress that I saw the trailer and I just thought, oh, this is a shoo-in. They love biopics. Award season loves it. I mean, when you do a biopic, you're almost a shoo-in. I know this actor once said to me that he respected all the performances and he knew a lot of the actors, but he said, like, when is it going to stop being who's playing a biopic or who's dying from a disease, like, to get the Oscar?
True.
And he was referencing Matthew McConaughey, which I thought was great in Dallas Buyers Club. I thought he was fantastic.
Yes.
But the reason why I liked Leo more for Wolf of Wall Street was because Leo is from a very weird part of Los Angeles. You would have to see it in person. And he was having to play a guy from New York. He was having to play so many different types of guys, the scumbag, the nice guy, pretend, not pretend. And he had to carry a movie for 3 hours as to where Matthew McConaughey played a Texan dying in Texas, and he's from Texas.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I give him all the credit, and I thought it was fantastic, and it moved me. And a friend of mine was actually in one of the scenes in the movie, so it was, like, cool to see my friend acting with Matthew McConaughey. But at the end of the day, I was kind of like, you know. So I've always thought that to be an odd debate that maybe we can just have here for a quick set of, you know, what do you think about how
actors Oscars because they lost weight? You know, are we giving actors Oscars because they transformed themselves? I mean, I thought Jared Leto was, I mean, he was amazing that. I mean, physically, I was like, holy cow, look at this man. Talk about transformation.
Yeah, Jared Leto was a different story because to me, to be, you know, as guys, we have this small list of guys to where, like, we know we could never compete with, even if we looked exactly like them. And so seeing him as a transgender, which nothing wrong with that, was great, was just floored me. I was going to say his Oscar was great, but what I thought was interesting about when they hand out these awards is that there's never really, I don't think anything goes into the preparation. Like, I remember one year, the year that Kevin Spacey won for American Beauty, probably one of my favorite movies of all time.
Chuck loves that.
It was like, I remember seeing that, and, you know, there's a significant fight in the movie between the father and the son, and I had seen it the first time I ever had a fight with my dad, and it wasn't like that. I mean, we weren't throwing blows, but it was like, it was literally like two hours after the fight, I'm watching this, and then the way Kevin Spacey, you know, now that I'm probably closer to the age he was supposed to be in that movie, the movie just resonates. But I'm like, okay, that's a guy thing, and that's the guy tonic of feeling like a loser. Your wife doesn't like you anymore. I'm not saying it doesn't happen for women, but that year, Denzel, Denzel was up for the Hurricane, so it's like, nothing really goes into what the preparation is. I mean, to become this ripped boxer and
right.
You know, have to play this guy who's stuck in a cell, and as opposed to just playing a guy that, you know, your wife doesn't like you, like, that's a lot of men.
and the prep work involved, like, you know, Ryan Gosling didn't play the piano. He was amazing in La La Land. I mean, he probably had that natural skill. He never played the piano. He was taking piano lessons for 4 to 6 hours a day to prep for that movie, plus dance lessons. Because I was I mean, and it's not like the camera pulls away. That's him playing. And so it's not like, you know, they have the stunt hands come in and the camera pulls away. And I just thought, he was Mickey Mouse kid. He probably had some musical talent. And my friend said, no, because I read that he had never played the piano. He learned for the movie. I'm like, so, you know, not only are you prepping the actor you are in the movie, he's learning to play the piano, plus he had to learn how to dance. I mean, that's a lot of stuff in your plate besides just shooting the movie itself. But I'm sure that him learning how to play the piano probably helped get him into character.
Plus what he said in the thing about how his brother-in-law was dying of cancer while he shot it. I mean, that.
Yeah.
That had to be crazy.
That's what he was saying. What's his girlfriend's name?
Ava Mendez.
Eva Mendez. Yeah. Can imagine that. All that. And plus, he's filming the movie. So he's away. She's got those two small kids, a dying brother. Whew, that could not have been an easy process at all.
Have you seen
La La Land? Did you see that?
No, that's one of the ones I want to see next. And I was going to ask you if I should see it because that's one that I have heard 50-50. Oh, okay. So that'll put me on the side of checking it out because I'm one of those.
I thought twice because my friend that I went to see, she didn't have her kids. Her kids were being taken. So we went to see Hidden Figures, and then she goes, I haven't seen La La Land. I go, well, I saw it last week. She goes, you want to see it again? So we just kind of paid and went back into the theater. So it's not like I went out of my way to see it a second time. But I would definitely I'm a musical theater junkie. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really fun take. I thought it was a great homage to L.A. I enjoyed it immensely. Absolutely.
Well, I'm an Emma Stone junkie, so.
Oh, so are Chuck and I. big time. We love us some Emma Stone. And also Ryan Gosling, yeah, he's – so the two of them together. And, you know, this is the third time they've done a movie. They've got great chemistry. Great chemistry together.
Yes, he's – you know, and I mean, for Emma Stone, she's been in the last couple of Woody Allen movies. And then, you know, I just couldn't stand what they did to her for Aloha. But Ryan Gosling, speaking of him, one of his first – I think his first Oscar nomination, if you can find this, it goes on and off of Netflix. It's called Half Nelson, and he was only like 26 or 27, but he played this crackhead school teacher. And
I didn't recognize the name, but I recognized strongly. Yes, saw it. Depressingly amazing.
I personally think after watching The Globes that it's obviously they split those musical comedy characters because they want to award multiple performances. I mean, like, Leo got a Golden Globe for comedy for Wolf of Wall Street, and I remember in his speech being like, the room of comedians I'm in, and they're saying I'm the funniest guy. But I think that with La La Land, I'm just, aside from Emma Stone being so talented, she's just so fun to look at. So.
Yeah, she is, and she's delightful. I mean, she's just so, she's like, you know, the Meg Ryan of her generation. I mean, everybody loves her. She's just super sweet, and she's talented. I mean, I fell in love with her. Easy A. I mean, she's just she's charming.
That's such a good way of putting it. Easy A. Well, that was just one of those that I remember I got from the library, and I only got it because Thomas Hayden Church was in it. I didn't know it was going to be such a small role, and I thought because I just have loved him ever since Wings and then Sideways.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, he was just totally this friend of mine in Sideways. I would never say who it is, but. And that's why I always say with that movie Sideways, I'm like, I laugh at it so much because I'm like, people ask me, oh, which guy are you? And I'm like, which guy do you think? Like, the guy who just gets girls every 5 minutes or the guy who's like an artist that's depressed? Like, it's not a real big guess. So Emma Stone with Easy A, I've probably watched that movie 10 times and not just because she's beautiful.
Yeah, I was just on the other day, I watched it again.
Yeah, it's so hard to not watch if I see it at the library or when it was on Netflix. So I'm
sure
she's in
it. And her parents, too. Her parents were hysterical. Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson, her parents were so funny in that movie as her mom and dad. Just hysterical.
Oh, yes.
I thought they added their own little level of funness to that movie.
Oh, yes, completely. She was, you know, that was one of those kind of where you, I love that you said the Meg Ryan, because I saw a movie the other day, or we reviewed a movie on the show, and now it's in the red box, and the whole time I was thinking of the movie, I thought, this movie is like the closest you can get to When Harry Met Sally, without that When Harry Met Sally just always has that, you know, that landmark scene, and then the whole, you know, I always remember that movie so vividly because my dad slipped and said to me, you can't see it because of one scene. And I was 10 years old. And I was like, he had let me see Born on the 4th of July to learn about veterans. He had let me see JFK to learn about what happened to the president. But I couldn't see this movie called When Harry Met Sally because of one scene. And so and it became like this Raiders of the Lost Ark thing for me. And finally, when I was like a teenager, he let me watch it. And I was just like, what's the scene? And when he told me, I'm like, really? You kept me away from this for like 5 or 6 years because that?
You kept me away from this great movie. First of all, at 10 years old, you probably wouldn't even understood what she was doing.
Of course. So there was nothing. I said,
but
God,
the fact
that
it was Rob Reiner's mother. I mean, I love the backstory that was Rob Reiner's mother. I mean, I love that. That's a funny, funny scene.
Yeah, and that movie, you know, being the first to kind of really look at men and women's friendship and can they be friends, will always kind of hold that the way Ben-Hur holds Gladiator movies. I can't believe they made a Ben-Hur remake. Let's not waste our breath on it. But I still can't believe I saw that on the poster.
Did Josh work on that?
On the new Ben-Hur? You know, I haven't asked him.
He worked on the 300. No, not the new Ben-Hur. He worked on something else that was kind of gladiator-ish. I'll have to ask him. It was something the 300. No, something. Oh, I don't know.
I talked to him, it was Star Trek, and we were going to do a Star Trek episode, but I can't watch those effects films with my epilepsy. So I have to go out when it's Divergent. Like, I joke with him, I'm only going out because I want to see Shailene Woodley, or like, I'll always be like, who's the lead actress? That's my joke with him. But I am bummed that we had this joke for so many years. I'm like, I can never support your work because A, you can't tell me what you're working on. And then B, I have to be like, oh man, that's totally going to mess up my epilepsy. So like, right, congratulations. Right. I hope your work was good.
I know he just finished a commercial for the Super Bowl. I can't remember what it's for. He just said he just finished a commercial they're doing for the Super Bowl. I can't remember what company it's for.
I see his MasterCard commercial every once in a while where that girl goes back and gets her card. And then
right, with the flambé, with the cherries flambé. I think that was his thing. But I can't remember who he said the Super Bowl commercial was for, but, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was – and I
think
remember
this is the second or third time he said a Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah, because a couple of years ago, I remember he did it when the Seahawks were
in. The Tea Party. He did the Tea Party one.
And then the Seahawks lost. Because I remember he emailed me right after the game, and he's like, it's too much to ask that you have a commercial in the game your team wins. He's like, you got to pick one or the other. I kind of laughed. I said, you know, I believe in asking the universe for stuff, and that is a bit much. Like, so... Is there anything else you'd like to mention? Because I think you had told me you saw Lion or...
Oh, my! I tell you, Paul, Lion is up there with probably one of my top five favorite films now.
Okay.
It blew me away. I sat there at the Grand, the little place in Tacoma where I got you that T-shirt, the very small art house. It's totally run by volunteers. And I sat there and I had a tissue over my mouth stifling my sobbing. It was amazing. The fact that it was a true story and visualizing the little boy at the age of almost my granddaughter being on the streets for 2 months and just, you know, not knowing the language and just, it was just heartbreaking to watch, to see Dev Patel, you know, change from, you know, the goofy guy in the Marigold, you know, hotel movies to this serious, older man. I mean, a grown up guy. The movie was awesome. It was just really, really amazing. And Nicole Kidman is the Australian parent who adopted he and another young man. But it was just very powerful. It's the old cliche, who am I? Where do I come from? And you know, he gets lost at 5 years old. So he you know, what's your mom's name? Mommy. I mean, he doesn't even know his own last name. Doesn't know where he's from. Gets caught on a train, goes 1,500 miles, totally different part of India where they have a different dialect, so no one understands him. Oh, my God. It was so – you have to see it. Once again, not playing in my big theaters. I have to go to the art house. But it was so good. You'll be riveted. As a parent, it resonated with me. As a grandparent of a child who's about the age of us and he was small, that broke my heart. Very, very touching. Very, very touching movie.
Yeah,
after
you said you were going to see it or you had just seen it, I happened to see the trailer come across YouTube, and I was just like, wow, that does look amazing. I mean, you know, to those that dive deeper with books or theater, there's obviously, what is it, there's like Man's Journey Home, Man's Journey to Find Himself, like the three themes that are the only ones possible. And so I just thought that was, that just intrigued me so much, of a boy losing his identity or where he's at or not even knowing his identity and having to find it.
Right.
That alone was like, I've never heard something like that even attempted. So when it gets around.
You know, yeah. And if you're trying to find your family, you know, if you go to, you know, genealogy, ancestry.com, he didn't even know his last name. I mean, so where do you start? He didn't even know what town. He just knew that when he got on the train, there were two water towers. Was India. I mean, so he had no idea until someone said, have you tried Google Maps? It kind of thing. But it was just, you know, you and I, if I was trying to figure out who my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather was, I'd have, you know, my name, I'd have some sort of, this kid had nothing to go on, nothing. And it was just basically just a shot in the dark. for him to find it. And he had a great supporting actress, Rooney Mara was his girlfriend.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go see it tomorrow. You just sold me. Rooney Mara is my...
Yeah.
Her and her sister, Kate Mara, are my... they could make a movie about them tending frogs, and I would go see it.
He's his girlfriend. So it was just, it's really, go see it. Absolutely go see it.
Oh, okay. Rooney Mara. That's all I needed to know. You just needed to say Rooney Mara, Aaron. What was this whole synopsis and how
lead.
You felt?
I buried the lead. I think you'll enjoy it immensely.
I get emails from your son where it's just like, you know, it's a Rooney Mara article that has no point to it, but he just, you know, knows that I want to know if she got a speeding ticket or something. So,
I know you're a Rooney Mara fan. I got it.
Oh,
yes. It's on my list now.
Yeah. And, you know, for the longest time, I'd watch The Social Network and I knew it was Rooney Mara, but I didn't know she was sisters with Kate Mara. And she was so great in House of Cards. I remember being so mad when Kevin Spacey pushed her in front of the train. Mm-hmm. I was just
and
like,
you know the family history, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know the family history? Her grandfather holding the Jets or owns one
the,
of the NFL teams?
Steelers. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean she's from NFL royalty. Yeah.
Right.
And as sisters, they couldn't be more different in their acting.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
totally,
a really good point.
They have different looks. Kate Mara's always the girl next door. I mean, Rooney Mara. I watched the trilogy of the girl with the tattoo. I mean, she was awesome in that. I mean, I watched Stuck on my binge watching back to back. She was so good in that. So very good.
I didn't look. She's in Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
All three of them.
Wait, I got you, are a
Rooney Mara fan and you've never seen them?
Well, that's the thing. I was just going to say, you're saying exactly what your son has said to me before. He's said
that's
basically
what made her a star. No one knew who she was until those movies.
Yeah, you're like, you're a David Fincher fan, and you haven't seen Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So, yeah, the library right down the road.
Not even that. You're a David Fincher fan, and you like Rooney Mara. What is wrong with you? I'm going to slap you on the phone. I read all the books. I watched the movies because I read the books, and she was phenomenal in that. I mean, she was so dark and so twisted. And she's an interesting, and her sister could play like, you know, the girl next door and the cheerleader and Mari and Rooney is just, she's a little bit more jaded. And I like that because they'd never be competing for the same part. That's for sure.
Right.
Yeah,
well, you know,
I'd love to see them actually be in a show together.
It's like I always say, if either one of them is in it, they deserve the Oscar, Emmy. Doesn't matter what they
do.
If I was the voting board, I'd be like, Kate Mara, Rooney, everybody else go home. Well, thank you so much for your... Oh, good.
You are welcome.
Oh, no, did you have something else to say?
No, I was just saying that... I can't remember what I was going to say now. I'm totally blanking. I know what I was going to say. I like the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards better than the Oscars because the Oscars seem a little bit too political for me.
Yeah.
But I like the Golden Globes. I like the genres being mixed. I like the TV with the movies. I like the fact that they sit around tables with their team, that there's drinking and eating. It's more of a party thing. The Oscars are a little too stuffy for me. I will watch them, trust me. But I like the Golden Globes and the SAG Awards much better because I think it's more fun. It's more celebratory.
Oh yeah, no, totally. If I was with a bunch of friends and we were up for Golden Globes, I would really be at the bar. And like George Clooney says, don't start drinking till your category's passed.
Yeah, so fun.
Yeah, so
we can have another talk after the Oscars.
Oh yes, no, we're gonna do more of these episodes, Aaron and I.
What are the nominations for the Oscars coming out?
You know, it's usually the first week of February, so that should be soon.
Okay, pretty soon. Okay, so yeah, we can do this again. We can talk winners and losers and how we felt about the Oscars.
Yeah, anytime. You know you're welcome.
Sounds good. Okay, thanks, bud.
Take care. Aloha, Aaron.
Okay, you too.
Bye. As always, I love talking with Aaron. She's such a blast to talk with. I was one of the only times I'll pat myself on the back and say it was a great, fun idea that I came up with last year to have her come on because it's always done good numbers. Our Oscar series did good last year. There's just so much going on and only got a few seconds here to wrap it up. So I want to say thank you as always. Aloha. Most of all, peace. Whatever you're going to do today, make sure and watch a good movie. Aloha.